We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome into the fourth period. Welcome back inside Enterprise Center. A little extended Blues postgame coverage after the huge 3-2 win tonight. Blues over the Winnipeg Jets, a 4-2 series win as the Blues advance to the second round. First time winning a Game 6 since 2001 when they defeated the San Jose Sharks. Pretty incredible, and especially to do it here back in St. Louis. Joe Vitale, Chris Kerber, Chris Raby, Amy Mark scores, the whole gang here with you. Some extended Blues postgame coverage. Of course, Ryan Schulte and Zach Schmidt helping out as well. Kerbs, that's incredible to me. Game 6, first win for St. Louis since 2001. 0-8 since then in Game 6s.
Even more importantly, and I was looking this up earlier today, so with the Blues have gone up 3-2 in a series and headed to Game 6 11 times in their playoff history. All right. They've won Game 6 only 4 times. This is only the 5th time out of now 12 that they've actually won Game 6. 5 times, now 6, that Game 6 has been on home ice, and only once until tonight. So now is the second time. Only once until tonight had the Blues won Game 6 on home ice to close out the series. And the last time it happened was 1996 in round one when the St. Louis Blues won Game 6 against the Toronto Maple Leafs here in St. Louis. The only other times they've won Game 6 when going into Game 6 leading 3-2 was in 2001. They won Game 6 in San Jose against the Sharks. And then in 1970, they won Game 6 in Minnesota in round one against the North Stars, and then they won Game 6 in Pittsburgh against the Penguins in 1970. So the fans really did see kind of a unique piece of history today based on how previous playoff series have gone for St. Louis Blues, especially here at home.
And also outside of Chicago back in 2016, the first series of any round you've clinched on home ice since the Sharks in 2012.
Yeah, and It's
been a long time since that celebration. I mean, and the Blackhawks are just a different animal, right? That felt like almost a conference final, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened a ton.
You know, you've got to – playoff series are about adjustments as they go on, and you wonder after, say, game one, what's an adjustment going to be? On game two, what's an adjustment going to be? That kind of stuff. And finally, in game five, you saw a major adjustment, you know, by the St. Louis Blues. The Gunnarsson adjustment with Alex Pietrangelo, which has worked plenty in the past, and then the forward line changes. And I don't think that once the Blues did that, and as you mentioned, Joey, they put Sundqvist on the wing, and that took him out of the middle to kind of almost give him a little bit of a break there, put a rejuvenated Braden Schenn back in the middle. The Jets did not have an answer for that Blues adjustment.
Yeah, they didn't. And I think Craig Berube, you know, he's been known to be stubborn with his lineups all year long. The players like it. It shows the players that the coach has trust in us. Even though we have 2, 3, 4 bad games, he's still going to go back out there. That gives a lot of trust and confidence into these players. But at one point, Craig Berube had to switch it up, and he did it in that second period a couple games ago in Winnipeg. And since then, the Blues just really took off. And we were talking on the broadcast, and, you know, it was interesting comments from both players this morning. Braden Schenn loves the flexibility of being back in the middle. He said, "He got my legs. I want to skate. I don't want to think so much. I just want to move to the middle of the ice." And to me, that's what happened on that first goal. He's coming down the wing all the way from the defensive zone, builds up some speed, crosses his feet over, gaining speed through the neutral zone, puts it at the net. That got things rolling here to me. And on the flip side, like we were talking about, Kerbs, Oscar Sundqvist was saying the opposite this morning. I said, "You're moving back to the wing. What comes to mind?" And he said, "You know, I'm just exhausted. I am worn out. I am beat up. I'm looking for a little bit extra rest in the defensive zone because as a centerman, you're down low, you're in the battles, you're head first in everything." Oscar Sundqvist took a punishment in this entire series. So you look at both situations, one player had a little bit more to give, one player had maybe a little bit less to give, and Craig Berube made that adjustment and called it out pretty much exactly the way it happened tonight, and that was the best line on the ice.
Have we seen this type of dominance from the Blues this season at all?
Yeah.
I mean, Winnipeg, sure. But for a full 60 minutes?
Oh, sure. Yeah, look, in the second half of the season.
Tampa game, Toronto game.
Yeah.
But Tampa was – Tampa. That was a Binnington dominance. I'm talking
in terms
of – That was
a great hockey game, though.
I'm talking in terms of defense.
That was a team that hadn't lost at home in like
You allowed them to 6 shots on goal through 2 periods, 20 total, which ties a season low for them this season.
But again, the answer, yes, we have. I mean,
in different styles.
In different styles and in different ways. What you didn't expect tonight was this series was just so even all the way through. And even the game won by the Jets when they scored 6. Remember, Vladimir Tarasenko scored that goal and you were back to within 1. You know, so that game was even closer than the final score ended up looking. That this was the first game of this series where one team really looked better for a long stretch than the other team.
And Paul Maurice said yesterday, he said, this series is so even, we've charted the scoring chances, and they're literally identical. And he said, they're not C scoring chances. He said, they're grade A scoring chances.
Right.
And they're high-end red zone scoring chances. He said, but it's that close that it's the puck trickling one way or hitting a post or it goes off a stick for them, it goes off a stick for us. Tonight also the first time that wasn't the case.
I'm going to agree.
Not just the volume of shots, but the quality.
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree with Alex. I think this is the best, most dominating performance of the season. You looked at Nashville, yes, Tampa, of course. But you know what? Those games are in February. Tampa's ahead by 12 points, whatever it was at the time. You know, are you getting their best game? No. You're playing the Winnipeg Jets here tonight. It's a series deciding game. They're healthy. They're getting good goaltending. This is a desperate game for them. You got their best game, and the Blues have come out here and do what they did. 6 shots for 2 periods. To me, hands down, most dominating performance of the season.
You know, and I guess also you could say that the Blues, despite the incredible run, they're a better team now than they were in the middle of that win streak. They're a better team now and a healthier team now than they were in March, Alex, and they were in April. So maybe their best game is better than their best game in February.
You know, it's funny, too, Amy. We were sitting in on Paul Maurice's press conference this afternoon, and he talked about coming into a Game 6 where, if you go back to last year, when they lost to Nashville in that Game 6, he said it was a freeing feeling because they were pissed off after the loss. Then they were anxious to get Game 7 going, and then they felt it was a freeing experience for them, and obviously they went on to have success. But in this one, it felt like it was a little too freeing for Winnipeg because Paul Maurice talked about how the slot shots had killed both teams in this series, how this game is going to be won below the goal line, and it really felt like the Blues didn't allow Winnipeg to even get anywhere near that. I mean, it was one and done.
I felt like in every head-to-head statistic that you can look at, the Blues dominated, and even the statistics that aren't just on paper, not just the regular old box score. You look at the battles along the boards. The Blues were winning those battles, those puck battles along the boards. You look at the 50-50 pucks. The Blues were winning those. You look at even the way Hellebuck plays the puck behind the net and the way Binnington plays the puck behind the net. Binnington was far superior, and I know that's not Hellebuck's strength, but it's the details of this game in a series that is so tight. The Blues were winning those details.
Berube's talked about it, too. He said when Binnington's on his game, when he knows it from the bench that Binnington's on top of his game, is when he plays the puck out of the goal crease. He said when he can play that puck as smooth as he did tonight, that's when you know Binnington's on top of his game. And it says a lot about a goaltender who sees 6 shots through 2 periods of hockey and then 14 in the third period. And yes, they did get 2 goals. But still, for Binnington to be that composed through, honestly, a peak and a valley in 60 minutes of hockey says an awful lot, Curbs.
How close was Hellebuck to coughing a couple up?
I just think in the what the Blues figured out in the third period of Game 5 was a style of play to work against the Jets, and they were good enough to bring that into Game 6. And when Joe and I did the pregame show, we said the key is going to be the front of the Blues net. And this, by far, was the best the Blues have played in front of the Blues net. They took bodies. They took sticks away. The back-checking of the forwards tonight might have been some of the best back-checking of the forwards we have seen all season. And there's 2 or 3 specific examples from Tyler Bozak that stand out. Vladimir Tarasenko as well. The defense was able to step up at the blue line, and the defense was able to defend harder in front of the net because the forwards' back check was so good. And we talked after a couple of games. We talked actually going into game five that one of the issues the St. Louis Blues have had is not so much with their defensemen in front of their own net. It's the forwards. We saw three goals scored because forwards hadn't picked guys up. You didn't see that tonight. They figured it out. They carried it in. And they had a heck of a recipe. Now, there was a chance that thing was going to get tied up late. Holy moly.
Even with 35 seconds.
Oh, absolutely.
Imagine.
Yeah. You know, and so, but it was a great performance, a terrific atmosphere from the crowd. I think the crowd here out-atmosphered, if we can call that a word.
You can.
It is now.
Okay, it is now.
Amy?
Out-atmosphered.
Amy says yes.
Amy's ruling.
Good word.
They
good
word. And it was the crowd's most dominant performance of the year.
Yeah. Yes, that
the
part.
Crowd was
it was unbelievable.
I thought the energy in the building was great and just a terrific all-around win, you know, for this hockey team. Now, Joe mentioned this in the postgame show, and he's right. There's the potential where if Nashville-Dallas goes seven games,
yeah,
this series doesn't start till game seven. If Nashville – or till next Friday.
Right.
If Nashville were to win, then the St. Louis Blues go on the road. If Dallas wins, games one and two are here at Enterprise Center. What's really fascinating about the playoffs, and it had so many fans kind of chirp at me when I was talking about that 500 statistic in hockey and just how tight the Central Division is. Look where these other teams are. One of the reasons the point totals were what they were in the Central Division was the level of parity in the Central Division was just that good. And right now you're guaranteed to have three of the final four teams in the Western Conference be out of the Central Division. Colorado, by virtue of divisional playoffs, stays on the other side of the aisle. They'll play the Pacific winner between Las Vegas and San Jose. But if Las Vegas eliminates San Jose and Dallas eliminates Nashville, you have seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 moving on. 1 through 4 are gone in the West, and the St. Louis Blues are the number one seed moving forward.
All the way up through the Western Conference Final.
Through the Western Conference Final, and, I mean, shoot.
Potentially.
Who knows what happens if you're lucky enough to even get to the glory of the finals.
Right. And you guys might have already said this, but the Blues just became the first team in the expansion era to be in last place at any time after the new year and win a playoff round. They might just catapult themselves to the first seed, no less, as Kerbs pointed out.
So Craig Berube was asked the question. This is... First off, you saw the video when he jumped into the locker room after game five.
Incredible.
And he went blank and relentless, boys, okay? And so relentless, I think, has got to be, you know, a word moving forward, just like Gloria is the song to be playing, and just like You Look Nervous, apparently, is going to be a chant.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to run for a while here. Craig Berube was asked by some members of the Canadian national broadcast today about, you know, look, you're going back with the same lineup, the same line changes you made, and, you know, this matchup, that matchup, and this is the attitude of a coach that is so simple that it permeates through a room, and it's easy for players to get. He said, look, sometimes they're NHL players. Sometimes you put them on the ice, right, and they've just got to play and do their blanking job.
Yeah.
So play against who you're up against and do your blanking job.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Joe, as a player, that's about as simple as it gets when you know that's what the expectation is.
I wish I had a coach like that. Honest to God, like the coaches I've had in this league, we got chalkboards and whiteboards and we got magnetic boards. We got the big screens coming down.
It was too many boards. So
much. And guys would always joke about it, but it was almost like we were playing football. Like the clips and the video and just so overwhelming at times where, as a hockey player, I mean, I think that the rule of thumb is, you know, you forget something after you hear five things, right, for a common human being. For hockey players, it's like two. Like, break it down to three things. Give me three things to do in a game, and I'll do it. And Craig's got that. And I asked Braden Shen about this. This is going back like about a month ago. We were talking about the pregame ritual and prep and what he does. And he said he comes in there. We got the one board. We got special team, both sides. 5-on-5 keys, both sides. A little bit scout for the goaltender, but that's really it. He comes in. He talks very briefly. He's like, do you think that what he says to you guys – is any different than what he talks to us and us. It's not like he's keeping any secrets. Like, what he says to the press and what he says to the media scrum, that's exactly what he says to us. It's just that easy, and players love it. It's simple. It's an attitude, and he's figured out a way to get the attitude in this team in the right direction. It's just that basic.
He had a player come back to the bench once and was griping that his arm was getting held and didn't get a call. And he walked over to that player on the bench and said, I don't care if you got to rip your blanking arm out. Just get free and quit blanking about the refs and start playing. I mean, it's just that simple.
And I remember, Joey, one of our first pregames here at Enterprise Center, we were talking about, you know, something postgame. And you said, as a hockey player, the most important thing you have is, you call it read or instinct. Mm-hmm. And especially in these games where there's such a fine line, we see that. That's the difference in you know, making the right pass or making the smart clear or getting on the forecheck or being on the back check or Binnington knowing when to play the puck. At this level, it's, you know, read or instinct, and oftentimes that instinct is the difference in a game or a series.
Yeah, the coach puts the power in the players.
You've got to love.
Do you think any coach knows better than the 20 individuals that is sitting in front of them? Those are the professionals. Those are the NHL players. Those are the ones out there on the battles.
Yeah.
Hey, a good coach, in my opinion, instills that belief and trust in them. You know that Vladimir Tarasenko is going to do the right thing on the power play. You don't need to tell Ryan O'Reilly what to do necessarily on a 6-on-5 at the end of the game. He should know that. That's right. His job, right? He just puts him in the perfect position. He preps him well, and, you know, he's great. I love the win here tonight. A couple shakes, and boom, right down the tunnel. He's getting ready for round two. He's just got a great approach to the game. And the players are responding well.
It's like game five with Binnington. He shakes Braden Schenn's hand and then just skates off the ice like a boss.
Great. That was, you know what, that's
amazing.
A good moment.
Yeah.
The game's over. He just gave a little wave to everyone. He just darts.
I'm out. Did you see the overhead camera, the Schwartz goal? It hits 15. He just taps the post and takes his little.
He always does that. He's always aware of the post. It's his good luck thing. Tink, tink, and out.
All right, guys. Well, we got more to get into in the fourth period. Paul Maurice had some thoughts about a potential goalie interference in the second goal that was scored. We'll talk about that. We'll get into some of the other playoff matchups and, of course, the Blues' potential opponent in either the Dallas Stars or the Nashville Predators. But it's the fourth period. Chris Kerber, Joe Vitale, Alex Ferrario, Chris Raby, Amy Mark scores with you. Ryan Schulte, Zach Schmidt helping out as well. Plenty more coverage to get into next here on KMOX.
Taking that spot, they go to the far side for Thomas, to Dunn. Dunn waits, near side Bozak to Schwartz, fired it wide, and now it's Bozak centering. Schwartz score! Jaden Schwartz! Power play goal! 7:24 to go. Schwartz has two. The Blues have two. And it's 2-0 St. Louis.
Well, it's Jaden Schwartz there, giving the Blues a 2-0 lead. Welcome back into the fourth period. Joe Vitale, Alex Ferrario, Chris Raby, Amy Mark scores with you. Is that Jaden Schwartz goal? Seemingly not a lot of controversy, but Paul Maurice had a different thought on it. Here he is.
So I Helly felt that he got bumped first before Buff took it, and that's what pulled him off the post. So I'm taking care of my number one guy in that spot. Like, he feels it. So, and he responded. I mean, it wasn't really Connor kept that game at that number. And if he doesn't, if he's agitated, if he's pissed that we didn't challenge it, we might get a different performance. The second one's goalie interference. I got no way to challenge that. You got to rely on the guys in the ice to make the right call.
Thoughts, Joe?
You know what? I think for him to call goaltender interference on the first one, I actually applaud it. I think it's the right move. It's early in the game. There was contact from Jaden Schwartz, not enough to impede Hellebuck, but I like the call because that could have been a huge moment. And if that's overturned, it's back to 0-0, and that really could deflate the Blues. So I like that. The second one, first of all, I don't think it was goaltender interference. I think that Hellebuck was kind of swimming in his own crease. There was a little bit of contact earlier, but nothing that really led me to think that, oh, my God, that is definitely goaltender interference. So I don't think that would have been overturned, which kind of, you know, brought up an interesting question. And we were talking about it at break, Alex, before we started this, is that, you know, Paul Maurice did not have the ability to use a coach's challenge on the second goal, the Jaden Schwartz power play goal you just heard, because he already used it to start the game.
First
so,
right.
So the question was, you know, do these coaches use this goaltender interference call pretty freely and liberally, because it's only, you only suffer a timeout if you lose it, which isn't that really big of a deal. But the problem comes if
puts you in
a crucial game is a second one and it's a definite goaltender interference, or if you felt that it was, you don't have the power to change it, unless, of course, it's the final minute and it goes to trial.
Right.
But in that case, it wasn't.
Well, and I feel like using it to turn the momentum of a game is kind of pointless to me. Like, I understand your point of where it's like, look, you want to make sure that you can deflate St. Louis and put your team back into it, but to just use it for that reason alone, what happens if there's a blatant goaltender interference and you can't use it later on?
Well, the problem is, let's look at the flip side.
Yeah.
Let's say he doesn't challenge the first goal, okay? And say there's not another goaltender interference, not even close, the rest of the game. Let's say Jaden Schwartz is not even close. Let's say there's an empty net or whatever. Then the question at the end of the game is, why didn't you use your goaltender interference call? At least give it a shot, because now here you are sitting with a goaltender interference call at the end of a game. You lose 3-2, and that could have been the turning point. So it's a decision for the coach that you might as well go for it, because the chances of it happening twice in the same game are pretty rare, like we saw tonight. But it can happen. But I think it was the right call to get in early and make the question for the referee.
And what about the first thing he said was Hellebuyck was adamant that it was, like, to have his back early in a game, especially when he's been shaky at times.
And we've seen Jordan Binnington do that. I forget, it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was some sort of contact. Someone clipped his stick, and he was way out of position, and someone put it in, like, the empty net, just made a quick little move on a backhand. Gosh, I can't forget that game. But Jordan Binnington he stormed the hash marks to the bench, and he was looking at Craig Berube and waving his stick, and Craig Berube didn't even look at the video. It was just automatic, and I think the same thing he said after the game was, I got to put my trust in the goalie. I got to make sure I have his back in that situation.
Yeah, and I asked Jordan about that, because obviously in the AHL, they don't have review, so it's a little bit of a different situation. But he said he knew it had happened, and he knew he didn't want it to be missed. Sometimes the goaltender interference, there's a lot going on, and the goaltender can't really tell. He said usually you can tell if you can't get to a position that you should be in. But if there's a pile of bodies, it's kind of hard to know who exactly put you there. So he said on that particular play, Joey, that you were talking about, he knew it, he skated out, he didn't want there to be any equivocation in that. What's interesting about this calling challenging the goaltender interference, Paul Maurice was asked about it earlier this morning, but he was asked in context of you're losing the timeout. And he said there's not as much value in a timeout as there was 15 years ago, because everybody's got 6 minutes. You're not worried about the timeout so much. So now if there is an opportunity for you to, you know, call a goaltender interference, whether it's because you see the challenge or you've got your goaltender's back, you're not really having any hesitation in that. It's not like, oh, we're losing a timeout. He said, and even if you're in a close call, you're not going to call that timeout and say, hey, guys, it's a close game, let's try something new.
Mm-hmm. And it's generally not 30 seconds in, so you still get the benefit of the break.
That's exactly right.
If it's in the second or third period.
And so you're right. As he was discussing that and how coaches can freely call that challenge if they believe it's a goaltender interference, I didn't even think about, well, what happens if it happens a second time?
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. So that's why I think it's a good deal they
did
it.
Yeah.
You know what I do think needs to be potentially changed is the offside challenge and the ramifications of that for taking a penalty. And there are so few. How many times this year do you think you saw either the Blues or their opponent in the 82 regular season games you watched, now the 6 postseason games that you've watched, challenge an offside on a goal?
This season for the Blues?
2?
Maybe 3 or
3?
4?
And how many?
A couple burnt the Blues.
And how many goals do you think were scored this year? You probably saw 300 goals, right?
Right.
So
I still think that's a good rule, though.
No, but here's what I think they should do. I think that onus is on the official. Mm-hmm. And like in the NFL, where they review every touchdown, and 96% of them are black and white a touchdown, can't you have somebody in the war room or above on the ice who, when there's a goal scored and they're celebrating, they go back, whoop, entry, good.
Right.
And there will probably be 3 or 4 all year where they buzz down and say, let's take a look at that. But that's when I think it's unfair, because you're putting that onus on the staff. And I understand the video guys are great. They're paid to do that. But then to get penalized for that, I just think it would be more efficient and more fair, especially late in games, if every goal is just checked. And it would probably take 10 seconds, and a handful of times a year you'd have a small delay in the officials upstairs saying, let's take a look at this.
Well, and I feel like that rule, though, is also because the coaches were taking advantage of it at one time. They were calling
those. So take it out of their hands.
Well, that's why they use it, though, the power play. So rather than a goal happening, they know it's a goal, but they're calling it to get the timeout so they can get their players in and not waste their timeout.
But that's black and white. Shouldn't that just be right every time, like a touchdown in the NFL? Like, they look
that's
to
quick,
see.
That's a pretty quick play, though, to try and get right.
Well, but, Alex, I'm saying 98% of goals would probably be obviously onside, you know? Like, there would be so few that they would have to say, oh, let's stop. And then if you have to stop, you buzz down and take a look at
or
it.
Or worst-case
like,
scenario.
Just take it out of the coach's hands. The off-ice officials should handle that.
Worst-case scenario, you regroup as a puck drop after the goal, and then 10 seconds goes, and all of a sudden,
buzz it.
Just like you hear when you think it goes in and out of the bar. And
there would probably be so few of them.
Toronto saw something. They blow the, and they go the horn. Is it a goal or is it not a goal? And then you go back, face off again. You put time back on the clock. In some ways, or, I mean, do you increase the punishment of a failed goaltender interference? Do you go back to putting them in the box and shorthanded? So maybe there's less of those calls. It's less slowing down of the play, too.
I think any challenge should be penalized with a power play.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, because you're slowing down the play. You're not only just trying to hope that it gets called back, but you're doing it to gain momentum, to get a break, to not use your timeout. You're trying to give yourself an advantage. So I think you take that away from them and penalize them if they do it, no matter what, and it doesn't go their way.
The refs have kind of let it go a lot this playoff series, though. Or not just this series, but this year in the playoffs. Hyman last night on Tuukka Rask. There was clearly goaltender interference on Austin Matthews. That was the go-ahead goal. That put him up 1-0 late in the third. There was goaltender interference, and Boston was not happy with it. But the refs let it go, and even Toronto looked at it and said that, no, that wasn't enough to really impede Tuukka from making the push. But it was. I was talking to Louis DeBrusque about it this morning. The contact itself threw Tuukka off his balance a little bit. He started to go on his right foot to push, and he ended up on his left foot, so he couldn't push right to left to make the Austin Matthews save. So that technically is goaltender interference, but they kept that goal.
What was the series 2 or 3 years ago where there wasn't a timeout and Grant Fuhr was on TV and he went ballistic? There was a series where there wasn't a timeout. It was a tie game or a pivotal point in a game six or a game seven, and there was, what was it, Anaheim maybe? There was blatant goaltender interference.
Was that when Cujo and then like jumped on the ref and tore the ref down because he tripped?
No, I'm talking like 2 years ago.
Well, and this was 2 years ago.
Grant Fuhr was the analyst.
I thought you meant Grant Fuhr the goaltender. I'm like,
well, no.
What year is this?
Yeah. But he was on like TSN or something.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the issue, if there were no timeouts.
Yeah.
Even if you put it in the hands of Toronto, the problem 2 years ago is Toronto couldn't define goaltender interference. Mm-hmm. Nobody
but
knew what
it was.
But
they had no timeouts, so they couldn't challenge, and it blatantly should have been goaltender interference, and it should have come back, or it should have been offside. But there was something in.
But this
I mean,
was kind
like,
of good. It was kind of great that it happened tonight, and every coach around the league right now should take note of this. I mean, it's not something you just automatically use. This is something maybe to keep an eye on.
All right, it was the Ducks' controversial game-tying goal against Edmonton. You remember that series? It was Game 5, Anaheim and Edmonton, when the Ducks erased that three-goal deficit with like 7 minutes to go to get into overtime. And the game-tying goal, there was an absurd amount of interference, but there was no timeout left for Edmonton, so they couldn't challenge it. And Grant Fuhr went crazy. A ton of media went crazy. Like, he was literally, Kessler was literally holding Talbot's pad, but since it wasn't called on the ice, they didn't have a timeout. They couldn't review it.
Pat Maroon was in that game, right?
Yeah, and then Anaheim ended up winning that game in overtime.
Which, in that case, to me, it goes back to put it in Toronto's hands. If they see it and there's goaltender interference, it's not a bad call.
You know, Amy and I were talking, too, going back to that goalie interference, not opportunity to call. You can make the argument that the momentum, if he wouldn't have called that timeout or used that goalie interference, you can make the argument that the momentum could have been on Winnipeg's side after the Blues had scored that goal first period pretty quick. I mean, an elimination game, backs against the wall, Winnipeg doesn't come out ready to play, St. Louis scores quick, Winnipeg wakes up.
Yeah, and
So Paul Maurice could have deflated.
Right, and I don't think that I was as concerned about momentum, the Winnipeg Jets gaining the momentum as I was the Blues somehow letting their foot off the gas pedal just a little because this is a team that had to match the desperation of a team facing elimination. How do you match that, especially when the home team hasn't had any advantage in this series? It's not like they could come in and say, this is our barn. We're not going to let these guys take this from us at home. The Blues somehow had to get up to play at a higher level than a team facing elimination.
I'm glad they didn't give them that wake-up call, because if you let them back in, you may as well give them a coffee and orange juice and say, you know, let's get on the plane and go back to Winnipeg. You know,
if you wonder how to match desperation, Chris just said it. I talked to the players this morning, and, like, I'm not interviewing them. We're just talking, like, player to player.
We want to spend Easter here.
They're like, do you think we are going to get on a plane to Winnipeg
on Easter
tomorrow, Easter Sunday? It's going to be like 75 and sunny. My kids, my wife's already got the eggs ready to die. And
my wife's going to kill me if she's alone with the kids all day and they're sugared up.
These are human beings.
That is brilliant.
It's a powerful motivator, man.
Right there. Do you think you're going to leave your wife home with your kids' stuff and peeps in their mouth and going berserk all afternoon? Absolutely not. No. But in all seriousness, though, the motivation was that.
This seems real.
I like how you're blaming your kids sticking peeps in their mouths.
This is reality. This is reality. This is a holiday.
And it's also the same as being able to compartmentalize and move on after a bad loss, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 120%. They did not want to get on that plane tomorrow. And not only that, of course, the holiday, I'm making fun of that, but it is part of it.
For sure.
But to go play Game 7 in Winnipeg against a heavy team, if you want to set yourselves up for a good round, close it out here tonight. Even if you win it in Game 7, it's gonna take a toll on you. And the Blues knew that. And there's not many cities that are worse to go to than Winnipeg. I'm going to be honest with you.
I like how Joey was blaming his kids for stuffing peeps in their mouth all day. He's going to be the one doing that.
Love me a good peep.
Love you a good peep. Joe, we're going to let you get out of here, man, so you can go and enjoy a good turkey with your dad after a big day today. But we appreciate you sticking around for the fourth period.
Thanks. Yeah, shout out to my dad, Sam. He killed his first turkey today.
I think that video needs to be posted on social media so everyone can see it.
What a story.
Everyone needs to see it. Joe, hey, by the way, everyone enjoyed our 6:15 show today, but you may be down 7 or 8 bobbleheads by the time you get down to your cubicle.
I will be bobbleheadless?
You will
is
be
that a word, Amy?
What was the topic?
Ruling?
It is now. Yes.
Joey's
well,
a klepto.
Without bobbleheads. That's what that means.
Joey's a bobblehead klepto.
And apparently the whole West Wing of the Blues staff was listening in, and they all caught on that. That's where my bobbleheads are going, and they stormed my cubicle.
I heard you say something about Field of Dreams, or
Mar realized that you stole all of her bobbleheads, and she went and took them all back. So
apparently, she had one of her little, children with her. She wanted to say something way worse, but
hey, but look, rat him out, your coworkers, listen.
And for the record, Cubby, Joey's good friend, Cubby.
Is Logan,
guys.
It's not John. It's
he
Logan.
Just walked by.
There you go.
Now I can call him by his first name.
Hey, do you think the boys listen to the pregame show down in the room to get pumped up?
Oh, yeah.
They're like, that's a hot take. Let's go take care of business.
Did you hear what he said about that percentage on the power play? Let's go do it tonight, boys.
Yeah. Joe, we appreciate you hanging around, buddy.
Hey.
Have a happy Easter.
This isn't Gloria. Work. This isn't work with you guys. This is just fun.
Except for when ABC.
This is just friends sometimes. Hanging out.
Okay. It's just dudes and dudettes.
All right.
Hanging.
Just bros and dudes.
Broads and broettes.
Broads and broettes.
Dudes is good. Go have a happy Easter, buddy. Thanks for sticking around.
Peace. Happy Easter.
We're going to talk Dallas Easter. Or Nashville, whichever
he
one.
He is risen.
We're going to talk Dallas or Nashville, whoever's a better matchup for St. Louis next as the fourth period continues on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line. Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg. On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Final time of the fourth period. Alex Ferrario, Chris Raby, Amy Mark scores back with you. Winnipeg loses to St. Louis tonight. 3-2 final score. Blues win the series 4-2. Now off to round 2, but they still have to wait to find out who that opponent could be. Game 6 between Nashville and Dallas is on Monday as Dallas leads that series 3-2. And then if there's a Game 7, that will be on Thursday. So potentially you could be looking at a Friday start to round 2. But hopefully they just do a triple overtime.
Yeah,
just beat
forever.
The tar out of each other. And then do a 4 overtime on Thursday to wrap up the Game 7 series.
By the way, I like that. Winnipeg loses to St. Louis 3-2. Maybe that will be the headline of the Post-Dispatch tomorrow.
Well,
Jets lose.
I just looked at a picture of Ryan O'Reilly spraying a water bottle on his face, and it said, sorry, I'm just bathing in the tears of the Winnipeg Jets. So it's a perfect way to do
guy,
it.
Man. Holy cow.
I know, just an incredible – you know, and we talked about this a little bit during the broadcast, but the awards when it comes to the St. Louis Blues this season, it's just incredible. And again, you're going for one award, but Binnington,
O'Reilly, Berube, potentially Armstrong. I mean, you could be talking about five or six trophies at the end of this regular, or at the end of the season, because of the regular season.
So I know that they roll out the finalists and the top three vote getters or whatever for these awards, but, and this is something I could easily probably Google, is all the voting due before the postseason starts, right?
I think it's due. It's due before the end of the regular season, I believe.
Right, okay.
I don't know when.
Yeah, I think that it's important to compartmentalize, but also take into account, we've talked about this, like early in the season when the Blues were, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, Ryan O'Reilly was still, I think, on paper, one of the most valuable players mm-hmm. in the league. It can be hard to define, and obviously if it's a team you watch every night, then you're more familiar as a Blues reporter or broadcaster or writer about his value to the Blues, someone on the outside looking in. But I think there are some interesting cases where you could almost make a secondary list of guys who were the most valuable to their teams, but maybe also the most overlooked, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's why I think, I mean, you could make an argument.
Jordan Binnington could theoretically be the most valuable player in hockey this year.
Yeah, well, and he wasn't in the top three for the Vezina. It was Robin Leonard, Vasilevsky, and Ben Bishop. But you could make the argument that he should have gotten some votes for that. And, hey, he potentially could have gotten some votes for that for the Vezina. But I think you could make the argument, and again, this goes back to any...
Kind of like goalie interference. Not everyone defines it the same way.
It goes back to any sport, though. I mean, in baseball, too, you sit there and talk about most valuable player, and... Okay, are we going off of how many home runs and what his batting average is? Are we going of how much he truly did for his team?
Clayton Kershaw won 1 year, and he only pitched every 5 days.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes the same with hockey. Like, sure, you could look at, you know, Nikita Kucherov and say, okay, was he the MVP of this team? Well, sure, he had over 100 points this season, but Stamkos did as well as three or four other players. But you look at Ryan O'Reilly for the Blues, a team that was at the bottom of the National Hockey League standings, a guy who played 82 games for you. He led every forward in time on ice averaging. He hit a career high in assists and in points. He was the lifeline. If there was no Ryan O'Reilly, there would be no playoffs.
Well, and that's what we've said. When the Blues were gasping for breath at the bottom of the NHL cellar, Ryan O'Reilly was the player doing chest compressions to keep them alive.
Yeah. Keeping them within arm's reach.
That's the best way to put it. Because it
wonder how many points they would have been out.
Without him.
If he wasn't on the team.
Because you look at their ascendance after the first of the year, and it was the convergence of two phenomena. It was Jordan Binnington having a historically good rookie start. His NHL, basically his NHL debut, was historically good. And then Berube's message, which coincided with Binnington's start, which allowed the players to not only absorb Binnington's message, but see the success results of it so that it accelerated their buy-in. That's the phrase. I mean, that's the cliche, but it accelerated their buy-in because they saw a success result. Because if you go back to when Binnington, or when Berube took over as head coach and Binnington wasn't the goalie yet, there was an improvement. You break Berube's first games into 10-game segments and you see a steady improvement in record, but it is Binnington's play that catapulted the Blues, I think, finally over that line where they got the momentum and they're like, we are a playoff team.
We've had someone tell us that they voted for Ryan O'Reilly as the Selke winner. I've had somebody tell me that they voted Binnington as the Calder Trophy winner. So when it comes to a storylines of the season, when it comes to the storylines of a season, like you look at a team like Tampa Bay, okay, well, the storyline was the 60-plus wins. It was the 100-plus points of Kucherov and Vasilevsky. But when you look at this team, you think about the scoring drought of Vladimir Tarasenko, the absence of Jaden Schwartz, mm-hmm. the emergence of Oscar Sundquist.
And you could add the relative down year of Braden Schenn, who
and
was
Alex,
an all-star last
Alex
year.
How about Jay Bouwmeester coming off major hip surgery?
Right.
Petrangelo probably coming back far too early in December from an injury.
So, I mean, you could sit here and talk about all of these guys and talk. I mean, again, you go back to the trade deadline before the winning streak where everyone wanted to trade the big pieces away. But there were two pieces that were consistent, and it was O'Reilly and Jordan Binnington. And that's been the storyline when you look at this team. And I like what Kerb said, relentless. That would be the word that you would describe the season, along with O'Reilly and Binnington.
I think oftentimes, too, awards or rankings are based so much on expectations from before the season started. Whether it's, oh, the Cubs weren't supposed to be good this year, and they were, so Joe Maddon's the manager of the year, even though a lot of other guys did a good job.
Right.
Or, oh, we, you know, Pettersson was supposed to be one of the best rookies, so in February you make your mind up and not even look at what Vancouver's doing or what other guys are doing. This team was supposed to be good. This team wasn't. College football, for some reason, they rank teams before they've ever played a game preseason, and then after they start playing games, part of the criteria that voters use is where they were ranked before they ever played a game.
Yeah.
That's not, it doesn't make any sense.
I think a lot of these trophies fall back on reputation. They fall back on reputation
100%.
Or they fall back on goals, right? We talk
it's
about
like a gold glove, too, in baseball, and why almost the same guys win every year.
Right. I mean, you look at the Selke Trophy. Two players have won six of the last seven Selke Trophy awards, right? You have Kopitar and Bergeron. Those are the two players that keep handing it off back and forth. And then you look at the MVP. It's gone to Connor McDavid because he puts up a lot of points. I think it's easy to look at reputation, and it's easy to look at goals.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Well, and now we look at round two and our last few minutes, guys, before we wrap up the fourth period. You go to round two, and I don't know if there's a preferred matchup for the way that this Blues team is playing. I will say this, though, watching that series.
I'll take Nashville.
I'll take Nashville because Dallas is a scary team right now. I think
had some issues with them this year, too.
Yeah, you think. I think Dallas is playing as good, if not better, than what the Colorado Avalanche were playing against Calgary. Look, Calgary ran into some hard times because Goudreau had 1 point. Mike Smith struggled. But if you look at what that top line of Radulov, Sagan, and Ben are doing right now to the Nashville, I mean, this is Pekka who was the best, one of the best goaltenders in the playoffs last year. This is a Nashville team that had such a dominant offense and the defense that was so stacked. I mean, that's everybody's go-to defensive pairing and core. And Dallas is making them look like they don't belong in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you look at Ben Bishop.
But yeah, that's the other one, too.
And
a healthy Ben Bishop is a scary team.
Exactly, and the Dallas Stars rise and fall with Ben Bishop's play. They also rise and fall with their top line of Sagan, Radulov, and Ben, who during the regular season were the reason for 42% of that team's goals came from that line.
Well, and as Chris said, we know the problems that the Blues have had with Dallas and Jamie Benn this season.
All right, I'm going to go away from the whiteboard. Do you remember that 2016 playoff run where the Blues beat the Blackhawks? I don't think you'll ever have another first-round series like that again because of where the Blues were, where the Blackhawks were. Little brother hadn't beaten them 7 games, Troy Brouwer. But do you remember from a storyline standpoint and an emotion standpoint, I don't want to say the Dallas round, the next round, was almost anticlimactic, but, and maybe it's because the Game 7 was the most comfortable Game 7 win that this team has maybe ever had, but there just wasn't like bad blood there. From a storyline standpoint, I would love to see Nashville. Mm-hmm. I would love to see the rivalry continue to grow. Winnipeg was, I mean, it was a great series. The hockey was great, but there wasn't any, like, hate or animosity. I mean,
there was politeness.
They were at Blues City Deli, like, taking pictures with Blues fans, like, last week, and it was in the newspaper. I want to see Nashville. I want to see Predator fans here, Blues fans in Nashville, bad blood, the rivalry continuing to grow. Because especially as the Blackhawks kind of retool, that might become the more relevant rivalry moving forward. The geography is there. It's an easy trip. I think it would be, just from a entertainment standpoint, awesome to see Nashville and to have kind of a little extra venom in the series.
Oh, I mean, it would be filled with hate. It would be
that's what I want.
Filled to the brim.
And I want to see some Preds fans here and some Blues fans there. You know, like that was great.
I think you're saying it'll be filled with hate, Amy, but it's really you're filled with hate.
I hate Nashville.
But I mean, it's definitely
so much.
Then why do you mimic your style after PK Subban?
That's an accident.
No, it's not.
First
it's Pharrell.
It's not Pharrell. Pharrell's hat is much taller.
Yeah, it's not too tall of a hat. It's the flat cap that Amy's pulling off.
That's right. And how do you know PK is not like?
Don't say he's mimicking you.
Me.
Oh, jeez.
He could be.
I know he's not.
Because it's a senior style.
I know he's not.
We've talked. We know. Well,
you did compare me to a rescue dog because of my beard.
Yeah, that was.
It was I said your beard has
a
purpose.
We're comparing you to one of the highest paid hockey players in the NHL. It's not bad.
I said your beard reminds me to adopt a stray.
And I think we compared Joey Vitale to Creed Bratton from The Office earlier today.
Well, Joey steals things.
That's
so
true, he does. At least he's not selling them.
Or dentist's name.
It's Crentist.
All right.
We got to
get out of here before we start quoting more Office episodes. Again, we got to wait to find out who the Blues will be taking on in round two. Dallas and Nashville play on Monday. That's game six as Dallas leads that series 3-2. But we do know the Blues are headed to the second round. A 3-2 win tonight. Blues defeat the Winnipeg Jets 4-2 in this best of seven series. On to round two. Big thank you to Chris Raby, Amy Mark Scores, Chris Kerber, Joe Vitale for sticking around, and of course Zach Schmidt and Ryan Schulte for helping us all out as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Cardinals baseball here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.